the fanfare for the common man, and here we are on 3CR, community radio, with the Dogs Program. We are the defence of government schools, and we are here to promote and to defend public education. And we've got a very full program this afternoon, so without any more ado, there is a press release, 1056, which Dale is going to read to us because it is very important. Over to Dale.
Thanks, Jean. This is the Dogs Press Release 1056. The rank and file of Victorian teachers have had enough. The rank and file of Victorian public school teachers have had enough. Labor governments at both the federal and state level are big on promises and lacking in execution. According to The Age on May the 12th and reproduced by Parents Victoria on the same day, the state government secretly ripped $2.4 billion from state schools after delaying by 3 years its commitment to provide the funding required to pay for the long-promised Gonski education reforms. The decision was taken despite Education Minister Ben Carroll warning Premier Jacinta Allen and then-Treasurer Tim Pallas it would damage the state's reputation, embed Victoria's status as Australia's lowest funder of public schools, and prolong disadvantage and inequities across the school system. This cut also flowed on to a reduction in matched funding from the federal government. According to the article, Victoria's altered funding trajectory for state schools means that instead of delivering a steady uplift of between $100 million and $200 million a year, funding will stay flat until 2029. Meanwhile, new figures obtained from the Australian Charities and Not-for-Profit Commission show that 50 private schools serving the richest families in Victoria raked in nearly $150 million in 2023 from donations, investment income, and other income. Shockingly, this money is ignored by government when determining taxpayer funding of these schools. The result is now being felt at the school level by overworked, underpaid public school teachers. So they are out and about protesting. Their first protest 2 weeks ago at Heidelberg, outside the electoral offices of Anthony Carbines, was very effective and has been covered in the Dogs program on 3CR. The next public meeting will be held at the Glenroy Community Hub, 50 Wheat Sheaf Road, Glenroy, on Thursday, the 4th of December, from 6 to 8 p.m. And we'll be talking to Daryl Croke, who is the organiser of that meeting, shortly. Back to you, Jean.
Yes, well, the teachers are restless, and now we have one of them to talk to you. Here is Dale with Daryl.
We are lucky enough to have with us today Daryl Croke, who is the president of the AEU Broadmeadows region, as well as the president of the Glenroy College sub-branch. Welcome to the Dogs program, Daryl.
Thank you so much for this opportunity to talk about our issues.
You're here today to tell our listeners about some upcoming actions, in particular a meeting in the first week of December. On the 4th of December, there was a public meeting. Whereabouts is that?
The public meeting, it will be in Glenroy, the Glenroy Community Hub, which is a Glenroy library, and that is in 50 Wheatsheaf Road in Glenroy.
What is the public meeting about?
Well, the aim of the meeting is to pressure the Victorian government to make a commitment to fully fund public schools. So we want our schools to be fully funded.
Who's organising it?
At the moment, AU members from Glenroy College. We've also got support from the AU members in the Broadmeadows region as well. The Glenroy College School Council supports the meeting, and we've also members from the Greens, local members from the Greens, and I'm speaking as an AU representative.
Who can attend the meeting?
Well, it's a community event. I'd like educators, parents and members of the community to attend.
Can people, if they do attend, speak and have their say on the meeting?
Yeah, absolutely. This is about the fourth meeting I've organised around these issues. So people can speak. We've only got two official speakers at this stage, which leaves plenty of time for people to speak from the floor. And that's really what I want to aim, so people can come and have their say from the floor.
So is the Victorian government delaying funding to public schools?
Yeah, absolutely they are. The figure from the AU is $2.4 billion. We come up with that figure because the Victorian government is delaying their stated commitment to fully funding schools. The gap between the stated promise and the vague goal is basically it's going to be 2031. So That means a year seven student starting next year, 2026, won't get full support they need until 2031. Now, they would have completed year 12 by that, before the funds arrive. Student in prep won't get the full funding they need until year six or the first year of high school. So we've got basically a whole generation of students are going to miss out on getting full funding they need. And add to that, we've been pressuring the government to do this for a decade. That's not counting the neglect and the funding deficit that's been happening for well over a decade in our schools. At the moment, there's no concrete timeline of funding implementation or any stated public strategy of basically targeting what areas would get the funding first.
What does the funding delay mean to the student?
Yeah, well, at the moment, the funding shortfall on average is about $1,800 to $2,000 per student. So put that in some context, in a primary school of 500 students, there is a funding shortfall of $1 million per year. If you have a high school of 2,000, there's plenty of high schools around that have 2,000 students, that figure is $4 million. So this is ongoing funding that needs to get done. It's not just a one-off amount, like a building is a one-off amount. You can come along, we spent $10 billion on this new gym. Politicians come along, they cut a ribbon. Oh, that's fantastic. We're talking about ongoing funding that's been denied.
It's not just the delayed funding, but is the Victorian government actually cutting funding as well?
Yes, they are in two really significant ways. The Victorian government has recently cut two programs. One is the Tutor Learning Initiative. Now, that's a program designed to help students with low literacy. It started in COVID. Some students with the lowest literacy and numeracy were given some targeted assistance in schools. Now, that's been cut from all high schools and some primary schools the next year. So at my school, Glenroy College, that will see a $360,000 cut in staff funding. And in some schools in the Broadmeadows area, it'll mean a funding cut of $1.2 million. On top of that, the government is also cutting a funding program that helps students with engagements, such as therapy dogs and support for extracurricular programs. Now, for some kids, you know, going to a soccer tournament at the end of the week, that may be the thing that keeps them in school and keeps them in college.
What do you hope to get out of the upcoming meeting?
Well, I want to send a message that the local community are unhappy with the cuts and delays in the funding, and I want the government to seriously sit down with the AU leadership and to fix this funding mess that they've got themselves into.
Why should 3CR listeners attend the meeting and take up this issue?
Well, this is a class issue, pardon the pun, but the overwhelming majority of students who attend public schools, like myself, are working class. Like the cuts, the funding cuts and denying funding to working class communities fundamentally is a social justice issue. Your postcode or your last name should not determine the education that you receive, and at the moment it does. I also believe that this campaign is winnable. I mean, we can actually win this. So working class communities need to have a win on something. Now, the alternative to that is we're going to have a steady lurch to the right, and we're opening up the possibility of a right-wing populist government coming in. So just have a look what's happening in the UK and the US at the moment. So if the left, and I broadly think that everyone listening to this program would associate themselves with being on the left, we must fight and win on issues that directly affect people's lives. Now, all parents want their kids to succeed, so let's build a social movement around this.
It's very much an issue of creating any kind of functional social mobility. Instead, we're creating these pockets of disadvantage and they're being entrenched. It's so important that public schools, especially regional and the more disadvantaged schools, get access to this funding.
Yeah, just speaking personally, I come from Northern Victoria. You can probably tell from the accent. Very few kids in my generation actually did HSC at the time. Very few of my family even finished high school. I didn't finish high school. I worked in factories for 10 years. I was the only person in my generation who actually made it to university. I entered university as a mature age student. So we've got a whole generation of people who are implicitly told, this isn't for you, and I'm basically want to assert, well, why isn't it? We need every opportunity that everyone else is given. So it's just not good enough. And it's not only just a matter of social mobility. We need to engage in the world. We need to engage in the world politically. We don't want middle-class people all the time lording it over us because they're more educated supposedly than us. So it has to stop.
What's likely to happen in 2026 if the Victorian government doesn't make a commitment to fully fund public schools?
Here's where I talk about I'm offering an individual prediction, and I'm a trained history teacher, so that I really want people to heed what I say. There needs to be a firm commitment to fund schools and to meet our current log of claims. So it needs to happen as soon as possible. Our EBA, to put it simply, people understand, expires at the end of the year. So we've got a log of claims. I don't want to go into it now, but we've got a log of claims and our EBA expires at the end of this year. So that means we can take industrial action next year. If there isn't a resolution, I predict, it's highly likely that Victorian AEU members, like AEU members in Queensland and like AEU members in Tasmania, will be compelled to take industrial action. Now, I've been a teacher for 18 years, and the depth of feeling and anger has been the strongest I've ever experienced it, particularly since lockdown, particularly since returning from lockdown. Our workloads have increased, and basically our working conditions have not got better, and there wasn't extra resources to put in to deal with that situation. And I also want to basically say there's a direct link between our funding campaign and our industrial campaign. So our working conditions are our students' learning conditions.
Sentiment at the rally the other day, it sounded like the teachers ready for industrial action. They're just saying, bring it on. And it's quite understandable. And especially when you see Queensland teachers stopping work. When you think of New South Wales Teachers Federation, they're quite a bolt movement and they've managed to reach some of the goals. Whereas Victorian teachers are still the lowest paid in the country in the education state.
Yeah, and good luck getting teachers to teach in Wodonga post-agreement if we don't get what we want. At the moment, basically a grad teacher in, and like these figures always change, they're already at least $10,000 to $15,000 behind. I've been reliably informed of assistant principals in Wodonga who've left their job as assistant principals to work 5Ks down the road across the border in New South Wales. Now, if I had it at the moment, if there was someone who was a graduate teacher, I would basically say to them at the moment, well, go to New South Wales and teach because you're getting $10,000 extra. So after 10 years, you're going to be at least $100,000 to $150,000 better off. Now, what does that mean in someone's life? That's a house deposit as opposed to renting for the rest of your life in a context where rents are going through the roof. So there needs to be a fix, and it needs to be a fix like now.
Yeah, it's certainly not sustainable at all.
No.
If listeners want to directly help build the December 4 public meeting, what can they do?
Search me up on Facebook. My name is Daryl Croak, so it's DarylCroke. And message me. If you want something to do, I'll give you a job. Share anything that I basically put up there. Post, encourage people you know to attend. I also want people to follow the AEU Victorian Facebook page and keep up to date with the campaign. Like, we'll be doing more things next year, so there'll be plenty of things for people to get involved with.
Do you have any ideas on how parents and community members can help any likely actions in 2026?
Yeah, like, it's the old classic, yes, organise in your own community. If parents, educators and community came together in every suburb and every town, we'll have an unstoppable social movement. You've got my permission to raise expectations and raise hell. Reach out to your local community public school and ask AU members if they need help. If there's a public meeting or committee in your area, please get involved. If there isn't, please set one up. We need people to take initiative at the moment. The most anti-democratic idea at the moment, it's not Trump, it's not Mohi, it's not any of those other wannabe fascists at the moment. It's the idea that we've got in our hearts that somehow we can't beat City Hall, that we can't make a difference. And I'm telling you for a fact, based on years of personal experience, you can. But it's hard, and we need to get out there and start organising.
Can we go over the public meeting details again?
It's December 4th. It starts at 6 p.m. It's in a beautiful venue. I mean, we've talked about how the working class community of Glenroy isn't really being supported, but well, they got it right with this venue. It's absolutely fantastic. Great venue. Starts 6 p.m. It's on the 4th of December, and it goes to about 8 p.m. It's at the Glenroy Community Hub, and that's at 50 Richcheese Road, Glenroy. It's very, very close to the railway station, and it's very close to a couple of bus lines as well. I mean, I want to fill up a room. We can make a difference. In order to make a difference, we need to fill up a room. We're getting, the local politicians are saying all the right things. Our local members are saying all the right things. But we're yet to get them to make like really firm commitments. I want to pressure the local politicians to make those commitments by, if they turn around and they see that there's only the 20 usual suspects at the meeting, we don't get the leverage. It's not, that doesn't look like pressure. It just looks like 20 people who I can usually get to a meeting to turn up. But if we start to look at anything that's close to 100, particularly if there's people from the community who turn up, then that starts to make a real difference. So that's, and I think that's what we need to be doing at the moment.
Thank you for your time today, Darryl. Good luck. I hope our listeners will make sure they get there. I will repeat those details again at the end of the program as well as now. That address is 50 Wheats Sheaf Road, Glenroy Community Hub, at 6 p.m. on December 4th. Public meeting. So go along and help these teachers fight for our kids. It's just that simple. Thank you for your time.
No worries. Thank you.
Well, that was very interesting. Thank you, Dale. Thank you, Darryl. But let's have a break.
Help us stay radical. Become a regular donor to 3CR. A regular donor is someone who loves 3CR so much that they set up an automatic donation to 3CR on the same day every month. Will you help 3CR by becoming a regular donor today? Together, we can keep independent voices on air. Go to 3cr.org.au.
In recent weeks, or well, a lot of the time, we give you the wonderful research done by Trevor Cobalt. But it has made the papers, but now it is making the medical journal. Here is an article, What Fully Funded Public Schools Could Do, written by Parsi Zalberg and Trevor Cobalt, and published in the Medical Journal. Over to Andy.
Thanks, Jean. What Fully Funded Public Schools Could Do. The following is the abstract of a paper by Professor Parsi Zalberg and Trevor Cobalt, published in the Medical Journal of Australia. Australia's most disadvantaged students are heavily concentrated in under-resourced public schools, worsening gaps in learning, well-being, and life outcomes. Although governments have pledged to fully fund public schools through the Better and Fairer Schools Agreement 2025 to 2034, most schools will still fall short of their schooling resource standard due to delayed and diluted implementation. The article argues that new investment, estimated at more than $20 billion over the decade, must be directed to schools with the greatest need. Evidence shows four effective priorities: full-service school models, stronger family engagement, healthy school meals, and eliminating compulsory fees. Equity requires not just funding, but targeted, sustained action. And now the article in its entirety. What Fully Funded Public Schools Could Do, Parsi Zalberg and Trevor Cobalt, published in the Medical Journal of Australia 2025 and published online on the 3rd of November. International comparisons and domestic evidence consistently highlight the structural unfairness of Australia's education system. Educational, health and social inequalities are deeply entrenched and manifest across schools and communities nationwide. Available data on schools reveal that disparities in academic achievement between students from the lowest and highest socioeconomic quartiles are not only substantial, but worsening. Increasingly, students from socioeducationally disadvantaged backgrounds are concentrated in under-resourced public schools. Ensuring equitable and high-quality early childhood education and schooling for all, as described in the Alice Springs Education Declaration in 2019, remains one of the most urgent policy challenges in contemporary Australia. A complex interplay of out-of-school and in-school factors contributes to poor education and health outcomes for disadvantaged children and youth. These include low household income, limited parental education, insecure employment, housing stress, and poor family health. Within schools, high absenteeism, shortages of teachers and support staff, inadequate infrastructure, and limited learning resources further constrain educational opportunity. Importantly, school composition intensifies these effects. Almost one-third of Australian public schools enrol student populations in which more than half are from the lowest socio-educational advantage SEA quartile. This creates what Wilms calls a double jeopardy effect, where both individual disadvantage and the concentration of disadvantage in schools depress student achievement and well-being. A robust body of international research confirms that equitable investment in early childhood education and schooling can substantially improve educational and health outcomes for all children. For example, a recent meta-analysis found that nearly all major studies since 2000 reported positive effects of increased school expenditure on student achievement and attainment, particularly for students from disadvantaged backgrounds. Yet, despite the clear evidence and the equity goals articulated in the Gonski Review back in 2011, namely that all children should complete Year 12 or its equivalent, and that students from disadvantaged groups should achieve outcomes comparable to their more advantaged peers, Australia's policy and funding settings have failed to deliver. Public schools, with the exception of the Australian Capital Territory, continue to be systematically underfunded relative to their needs, while recent funding increases have disproportionately benefited already advantaged schools. Achieving a genuinely fair and inclusive education system that effectively contributes to learning and employment pathways of all Australians requires reversing this trend through targeted needs-based investment and structural reform. New commitment to fully fund public schools. All schools in Australia receive funding from the Commonwealth, state and territory governments and various private sources. The proportion from each source varies between public, Catholic and independent schools. Federal government recurrent funding is mainly determined by the Schooling Resource Standard, the SRS, which is a measure of the amount of taxpayer funding needed by each school to meet the educational needs of its students. It is based on the recommendation of the Gonski Review in 2011. The SRS includes a base amount that is calculated separately for primary and secondary schools and indexed annually and supplemented by loadings for various forms of disadvantage, including low socioeconomic status, Indigenous status, disability, English language proficiency, and school size and location. The Gonski Review in 2011 intended that all public schools would be funded at 100% of their SRS, but this has never been achieved, apart from in the ACT public schools. Most private schools are not funded at the full base SRS amount. Instead, their base funding is adjusted according to the capacity of families to pay school fees. Schools are assigned a capacity to contribute score, a CTC, which is based on the median adjusted taxable income of families in the school. Funding ranges from 90% of the base SRS for schools with a very low CTC to 20% for those with the highest scores. This system of funding private schools has two major flaws. First, it ignores other income received by families from grandparents, the so-called bank of mum and dad. Many grandparents pay school fees fully or partially and also contribute funds for expenses such as house deposits, childcare, cars, and household assets. Second, private sources of income of private schools, especially for high fee schools, are also not accounted for in determining the level of government funding. For example, figures obtained from the Australian Charities and Not-for-Profits Commission show that 60 private schools serving the wealthiest families in Australia received over $350 million from donations, investment income, and other income in 2023. The failure to consider these income sources in determining the funding of private schools means that their financial needs are overestimated and, consequently, many of these schools are substantially overfunded by the taxpayer. This overinvestment in private schools is concerning given the ongoing underinvestment in public schools, which enrol over 80% of disadvantaged students. In a 2025 address to the National Press Club, the Prime Minister acknowledged this persistent underfunding and committed to ensuring that all public schools receive 100% of their SRS by 2034. He also said that a long-standing loophole that allowed state and territory governments to count up to 4% of their public school funding share as non-school expenditure, most notably capital depreciation and school transport, would be ended. Removal of this loophole means that the state governments and the Northern Territory government have to replace it with eligible SRS funding for their schools. To operationalise this commitment, the Commonwealth Government has secured a heads of agreement with all states and territories, formally titled the Better and Fairer Schools Agreement Full and Fair Funding 2025 to 2034. Under this arrangement, the Commonwealth will increase its share of public school funding from 20% to 25% of each school's SRS, while states and territories, excluding the NT, will contribute the remaining 75%. For the NT, which faces more acute levels of disadvantage, the Commonwealth's contribution will rise to 40%, with the NT responsible for the remaining 60%. Funding mechanisms for non-government schools remain governed by separate agreements. At the time of writing, September 2025, new bilateral school funding agreements between the Commonwealth and all states and the ACT, except Victoria, covering funding for 2025 to 2034 had been published. An agreement with the NT for 2025 to 2029 was published in 2024. Despite the promises of the Prime Minister, Premiers and Ministers for Education, the funding schedules and provisions in the new bilateral agreements show that, apart from the ACT, public schools will not be fully funded by 2034. State and territory governments are required to end the 4% loophole for capital depreciation by 2034, but they are permitted to claim up to 1.8% of their SRS, 1.5% for Western Australia and Tasmania, for direct school transport for public school students as part of their share of funding public schools. Furthermore, they can also claim expenditure on regulatory bodies such as curriculum and standards authorities. Both items are specifically excluded by the official agreement between governments on how the SRS is measured. Another concern is that the proposed increase in Commonwealth funding and the reduction of the 4% allowance is largely postponed until the last 5 years of the agreements, that is, until 2030 to 2034. For example, the Commonwealth share of funding Queensland public schools will increase by only 0.5% by 2029. The 4% allowance will remain in place until 2028 and it will take another 6 years to be removed. Similarly, the Commonwealth share of funding New South Wales public schools will increase by only 1.25 percentage points by 2029, and the 4% allowance will be reduced by only 1 percentage point by then. This backloading of Commonwealth and state funding increases compromises the prospects of achieving the equity targets for the future Healthy Countdown 2030 and in the heads of agreement. Nevertheless, the new agreements provide a substantial funding boost for public schools over the decade to 2034. The additional Commonwealth funding is projected at $16.5 billion, and the state governments will have to replace the 4% allowance with eligible SRS funding for public schools. The overall funding increase is indeterminate at present, but it is likely to be over $20 billion. Applied to the current public school population of about 2.6 million students, this represents a funding increase of about $7,700 per student over the 10 years. In other words, there will be, on average, $770 more for each student per year, but the backloading of new funding mentioned above means that the per student funding increase will be smaller during the first 5 years and larger during the next 5 years than the average $770. Additional funding is available to employ more staff, but will also have to cover increased salary costs for existing staff. Nevertheless, if allocated and used effectively, this additional resourcing has the potential to considerably improve student learning, well-being, and long-term health outcomes, particularly in schools serving communities with high levels of socio-educational disadvantages. Re-resourcing a better and fairer school system. The Future Healthy Countdown 2030 highlights a dual challenge for Australia's education system: to raise the proportion of students, particularly those from disadvantaged backgrounds, completing Year 12 or its equivalent, and to close the persistent achievement gaps between students in different equity groups and their more advantaged peers. These twin goals, first articulated in the 2011 Gonski report, must remain central to education policy. Realising them will require not just improved academic test scores, but also enhanced student well-being, health and engagement. The key question is how to direct new funding in ways that produce sustained and equitable educational and well-being outcomes. A wide body of evidence from international organisations and academic research offers guidance on how education systems can become more equitable. In Australia, recent inquiries by the Productivity Commission and the Australian Government have proposed reforms to better target support for disadvantaged students. The Better and Fairer Schools Agreement mandates that increased Commonwealth funding be directed to schools with the highest levels of need. Ensuring that public schools serving concentrations of disadvantage receive 100% of their SRS to recruit more educators, specialists and support staff is a necessary condition for meeting the equity targets of the Heads of Agreement for the Better and Fairer Schools Agreement. More teachers, other professionals and support personnel are critical to improving learning, health and well-being for disadvantaged students, especially in schools with high concentrations of socio-educational disadvantage. Additional staff can be used in a variety of roles, such as classroom support, small group learning, reduced class sizes, student wellbeing and health support, and offline programs to engage students. But there is no one-size-fits-all approach to improving students' learning and wellbeing in schools. Low-income, First Nations and refugee students, and those who live with disabilities all have different needs. And the demographic profile of schools with high concentration of disadvantage can vary considerably. Learning and wellbeing support needs to be adaptable and vary within different student groups, and it should be built on professional experience and expertise in each school. A central challenge for policymakers and politicians is to determine how the additional funding can be invested most effectively to improve student learning, wellbeing, and life opportunities. Based on national and international evidence, we identify four examples of how increased funding could be spent to deliver real improvements in equity of education and health outcomes by 2030. 1. Implementing full-service school models. 2. Strengthening family engagement. 3. Providing healthy school meals. And 4. Decreasing or eliminating families' voluntary contributions to public schools. Full service school models. Full service schools, also known as community or extended service schools, are designed to provide integrated educational health and social supports on site. These schools partner with government and community agencies to deliver wraparound services that address the broader determinants of student success. International and Australian research has consistently shown that well-implemented full-service models can improve student learning, attendance, behaviour, health and family engagement, particularly in high-need communities. Our Place, a place-based holistic model originated in Doveton College, Victoria, has reduced developmental vulnerability, lifted early learning quality and strengthened parental confidence, laying stronger foundations for long-term success. However, implementation requires careful planning and coordination. Several Australian states, including Tasmania and Victoria, have established partnerships between schools and external service providers. In 2023, the Independent Expert Panel recommended that all jurisdictions expand such initiatives. Under the Better and Fairer Schools Agreement, governments have committed to strengthening these models where appropriate. Western Australia is currently piloting a statewide rollout of full-service schools from 2026. Family engagement. Effective engagement of families in schooling is strongly associated with improved student outcomes in reading and mathematics across socioeconomic and cultural contexts. Strategies may include supporting parenting, improving school-home communication, encouraging family participation in school activities, and involving parents in learning at home and decision-making processes. Community-based schools often serve as hubs for both student and parent educational and health support. Although family engagement is widely supported in Australian policy frameworks, implementation varies considerably. Additional funding could be used to employ staff in disadvantaged schools to build meaningful and sustained relationships with families, an investment likely to yield long-term benefits in attendance, achievement, and well-being. Healthy school meals. Unlike many Organisation for Economic Cooperation and Development, OECD, countries, Australia does not provide universal school meals. Yet, recent studies indicate that around 15% of Australian students regularly arrive at school without food or money. School-based meal programs, such as the one at Berrima Public School in New South Wales, demonstrate the feasibility and benefits of providing nutritious food during the school day, especially for vulnerable students. Research from Australia and overseas confirms the link between school meal programs and improved physical health, attendance, concentration, and academic outcomes. In Aotearoa, New Zealand, free school meals have also been shown to deliver substantial cost savings to families. While some countries provide free school lunches universally, e.g. Finland, Sweden, and Estonia, others restrict eligibility to low-income families, for example, England and the United States. As Australia considers its approach, cost and equity implications must be carefully weighed, making sure that school meal programs are first targeted to schools that would need them the most. eliminate compulsory fees and voluntary contributions. Despite being public institutions, many Australian government schools invite families to pay voluntary contributions or charge them fees for curriculum-related activities and materials. For example, New South Wales schools impose charges for elective subjects, and similar practices are evident in Western Australia and South Australia. Some governments have employed debt collectors to recover fees. Voluntary contributions, often presented as invoices, have become a considerable and unequal source of school funding. In 2023, according to data from the Australian Curriculum Assessment and Reporting Authority, ACARA, database, public schools collected about $1.2 billion in fees and voluntary contributions, averaging $465 per student. However, schools in affluent areas can raise over $1,000 per student, while those in disadvantaged communities raise far less. With nearly 4% of public school income now derived from family payments, the principle of free public education is under threat. Removing these charges would ensure access for all to this full school curriculum, restore fairness in education, and boost young people's health and well-being by easing financial stress, removing stigma, and ensuring every child can join in learning and enrichment that build confidence, connection, and resilience. It would also protect the right to free education and the conditions for all students to thrive. A once-in-a-generation opportunity. Achieving a better and fairer education system in Australia is not merely a matter of aspiration, it is a pressing national imperative with profound implications for social equity, population health, and economic prosperity. The new commitment to fully fund public schools presents a rare opportunity to reverse decades of structural underinvestment and to redesign the system around the needs of all children, particularly those most disadvantaged. Unfortunately, much of the projected funding increase is delayed until the second half of the 10-year agreements. But funding alone will not be enough. Real progress depends on how these resources are used. It also depends on how future policies prioritise student well-being, engagement and learning, and on practices and services grounded in evidence about the potential of community partnerships. By investing in interventions such as full-service schools, meaningful family engagement, universal healthy school meals, and the removal of financial barriers, Australia can transform its public schools into inclusive, thriving centres of learning and thriving. The promise of equity must be realised not through rhetoric, but through bold, deliberate, and sustained action. Back to you, Jean.
Well, that was pretty heavy going. Thank you very much, Andy. And let's have a bit of a break, shall we?
You're listening to 3CR Community Radio, 855 AM. Visit the 3CR website at 3cr.org.au/podcast to hear the most recent recording from each show, or 3cr.org.au/streaming to listen live.
Well, we hope you're still listening to the Dogs program, because Jeff is now going to take us, as he does every week, overseas to find out what's happening there.
Good afternoon, listeners. Just for fun, I thought I'd look at some of the world's oldest public school systems. In Australia, our oldest public school was the Newcastle East Public School, founded in 1816, but that started as a church school and became a public school. In Victoria, we had the first public school system in Australia that was established by legislation in 1872. But that pales into insignificance when we look at the world's oldest public school, which is in Sichuan Chengdu Shishi High School in the Sichuan province, also known as Sichuan Chengdu No. 4 High School in China. And that was built in 143 to 141 BC and is still running today with a few interruptions in history, notably during the Cultural Revolution, for example, but it is still a high school today, and that's more than 2,000 years old. In England, the oldest public school — we're talking about public schools here, not church schools — in England, the Boston Grammar School was established in 1555, and it was built in 1567. So that's the oldest public school, which is free and designed for kids to go on to learn Latin, even if they didn't have the money to go to private school. And that was the inspiration for the first public school in the United States, which was the Boston Latin School. The Boston Public School in 1635 is still operating today. And it was originally designed to teach young boys only Latin and Greek, so they'd be prepared to go to college. Now, with that in mind, America has a very, very long tradition of public school systems. And there's an article now which celebrates truth, talking about the truth in the public education system in the United States. This article comes from Greg Wyman's Substack, Greg Wyman being a former educator. He writes, celebrating traditional K-12 public education on his Substack. It's inspiring, but also a little bit of a warning about how things are being twisted. He's looking for truth in a world of disinformation, especially right now as the public education system in the United States is heavily under the attacks of the current regime. He says, in the classic fairy tale, The Boy Who Cried Wolf, a shepherd boy repeatedly tricks villagers into thinking a wolf is attacking the flock. Finally, when a real wolf appears, no one believes his cries for help. This simple story offers an understanding of how marketing functions in the K-12 public sector, specifically how the school choice movement has relied on its own version of crying wolf to convince the public that traditional K-12 public schools are failing. In many ways, the movement's messaging mirrors the boy's false alarm, loud, persistent, and meant to provoke fear rather than convey truth. I share this children's tale to set the stage for the third installment examining free markets principles and their impact on K-12 education. This week's focus is the growing importance of marketing across the K-12 sector. More importantly, how the misuse of marketing principles has distorted public understanding of traditional K-12 public education. The more these misleading narratives are exposed, the more likely the public is to stop believing the cries of failure repeated by school choice advocates, just like the villagers quit believing the shepherd boy. The rise of school choice has ushered marketing into public education in ways that would have almost been unimaginable a generation ago. As deregulation opened the door to more school choice, the competition for students intensified. This competition introduced a new pressure point for the traditional K-12 systems, one that was never meant to be central to a public good. Instead of schools focusing primarily on teaching and learning, many now find themselves navigating an environment shaped by slogans, ad campaigns, and targeted messaging strategies. Schneider and Berkshire note that a term now exists for marketing in the K-12 education sector, advertising. They discuss how this form of marketing often relies on emotional appeals, questionable aims, and lofty promises. Tactics designed to influence families not through data or evidence, but through compelling narratives that may or may not reflect reality. Seth Godin, noted marketing author, provides support for this claim in his book All Marketers Are Liars, The Power of Telling Authentic Stories in a Low-Trust World. He identifies seven lessons for business owners, with two particular lessons that are relevant and apply to K-12 education. One, people don't buy facts, they buy stories that feel true. No one falls in love with data. Customers are drawn to narratives that match their worldview. Instead of drowning them in statistics, tell a story that resonates with what they already believe. Two, belief drives behaviour, not logic. Consumers act on what they believe, not what's rational. Your marketing should appeal to emotions, values, and identity. Make them feel something powerful enough to act on. For decades, the school choice movement has leaned heavily on narrative over data. Its most enduring story claims that traditional K-12 public schools are failing and that salvation lies in alternatives such as charters, vouchers, ESAs, and private schools. Well-funded campaigns, often supported by billionaires, have elevated this narrative far beyond the evidence that supports it. When paired with a political message that reinforces the same claim, the result is a powerful story that resonates with those who have predisposed to believe it. The repetition of these messages over 40-plus years has conditioned many to accept them as fact, even when the data shows a different reality. Arizona provides a clear example. After 3 decades of school choice expansion, evidence shows that families often act on belief rather than logic. One striking example is the statewide uptake of Empowerment Scholarship Accounts, ESAs. Despite traditional K-12 schools serving diverse communities with strong student achievement, roughly 1/4 of ESA participants come from those very high-performing public schools, primarily located in affluent areas. The movement succeeded not by demonstrating that these schools were failing, but by persuading families to believe they could do better elsewhere. At the same time, many parents place enormous faith in private schools, even though private schools are not required to publicise student achievement or be transparent about performance. Schneider and Berkshire note that the cultural image of private schools often resembles the idyllic world of Dead Poets Society, a comforting belief rather than an evidence-based assessment. Depending on the state, many private schools look nothing like this romanticised version. This changing landscape underscores the growing importance of truth in marketing. In consumer markets, the Federal Trade Commission, FTC, was created to protect consumers from false advertising. In fact, on their website, they make the following statement about truth in advertising. When consumers see or hear an advertisement, whether or not it's on the internet, radio or television or anywhere else, federal law says that ad must be truthful, not misleading, and when appropriate, backed by scientific evidence. The FTC enforces these truth in advertising laws, and it applies the same standards no matter where an ad appears, in newspapers and magazines, online, in the mail, on billboards or on buses. This standard is important, but the problem is, as noted by Schneider and Berkshire, it does not apply to the K-12 marketplace. School choice advocates are free to promote promises that would never withstand regulatory review in other sectors. Their marketing strategies target specific audiences with messages that appeal to emotions, identity, or political leanings. In essence, belief becomes the product. Schneider and Berkshire identify a critical problem with K-12 marketing. Targeted marketing accelerates stratification and segregation. When charter and private schools can be selective about who they enrol, the natural result is a sorting of students. Segmented marketing amplifies this process by directing messages to the families these schools most want to attract. The result is not a system offering equitable opportunities for all students, but rather one that reshapes the educational landscape along the lines of race, wealth, disability status, and religion. The data supports this reality. The Arizona Charter Schools Association, in the report Special Education Student Enrollment Patterns, SPED Series Part 3, provides the data for a comparison of special education between traditional K-12 public schools and charter schools. The report provides the percentage of special education students in the 15 largest traditional K-12 public schools, which ranges between 7.6 and 14.9%. For the 15 larger charter schools in the state, the range is between 1.8 and 12.6. Of this group basis, charter schools, often highlighted as one of the top-ranked charter systems in the country, has 1.8% special education students. Ironically, the report also provides the names of charter schools and traditional K-12 public schools with the highest populations of special education students. In this case, the charter schools with the greatest percentage of special education students are schools that only educate special education students, particularly students with significant needs. The schools with these specialised programs skew comparisons even further. School choice advocates frequently highlight that charter schools are majority-minority. While technically accurate, this claim lacks context. Demographic makeup largely reflects geography. Charter schools located in urban centres where minority populations are higher naturally enrol more minority students. Meanwhile, charter schools in suburban regions, like those in my district's area, enrol significantly higher percentages of white students. In my district, only 30% of eligible students attend local public schools, yet the district population is 50% white, 40% Hispanic and 10% other ethnicities. Yet the charter schools within the same boundaries enrol 64% to 70% white students. The pattern repeats across these charter networks operating both in Phoenix and Tucson. This disparity is not accidental. It is a predictable outcome of marketing strategies layered on top of choice-based enrolment. As a for-profit enterprise, marketing is critical. The school choice movement has leveraged marketing in a manner that traditional K-12 public education has not historically done. Some would complain that this is the problem, that traditional K-12 public schools had a monopoly in the K-12 education sector, so there's no reason to have to market. The other reality is that traditional K-12 public schools accept all students, so without school choice, marketing is not as critical. But not having to market has an upside. Instead of spending scarce resources on marketing, traditional K-12 public schools invest heavily in people. Nationwide, 80 to 85% of public school budgets go towards staff. This means resources directly support the adults who make learning possible. The school choice movement has created a situation where marketing, a very expensive cost, now competes for the limited resources. This week's celebration of traditional K-12 public education lies in its different approach. The celebration is a commitment to truth, transparency, and serving all students, not just those most desirable for marketing. Seth Godin's seventh lesson captures this commitment perfectly. He says, "Truth told well beats lies told loudly." The best marketers are truth tellers who package real value in compelling narratives. Lies might create short-term attention, but only truth sustains trust, and trust is the foundation of every enduring brand. For those of us dedicated to traditional K-12 public education, this is both an affirmation and a challenge. The stories being told about traditional K-12 public education must be authentic, honest, and compelling. They must highlight the real value our schools offer and provide a response to misleading narratives designed to create doubt. This lesson provides a sense of hope that the truth will win out in the long run. As a result, this is the path forward. The attacks on traditional K-12 public education are well documented, but the stories driving these attacks are built on misinformation, disinformation, and deliberate distortion. The more we share our genuine stories about student success, community, inclusion, and opportunity, the more the truth will prevail. The simple truth is that the traditional K-12 public education system is a system built on supporting and helping all students. A system that provides a social safety net for our students, builds and fosters a sense of community, and provides the opportunity for all students to achieve the American dream. Traditional K-12 public schools do not need to cry wolf. They simply need to keep telling their story and telling it well. A story about K-12 education system worth celebrating and a truth worth marketing. That's the end of the article. I do hope you enjoyed that. It gives us a little hope that truth will out. Cheerio.
Now we come to the favourite part of our program, the Great State School. But this is a bit different. You'll have to listen very carefully because there's some very creative children in this school.
School values, you better follow them. School values, five C's. We are proud of our school. We show that we rule. We always play fair and show that we care. We help cool to those in need.
And this week's Great State School of the Week is Glenroy Primary School. And here's a welcome message from the principal, Joe Money. Glenroy Central Primary School is a 21st century school with open, flexible learning environments divided into four learning communities: Foundation, Years 1 and 2, 3 and 4, and 5 and 6. Our current enrolment is about 300 students. Our community is culturally diverse with a wonderful blend of students from across the world. The focus for our school is always the students, with a particular focus on literacy and numeracy skills. During the first two sessions of each day, we focus on maths and reading, and every teacher in the school has an allocated role in the learning communities during this time to ensure all student needs are met.
School values, yes please, school values, you better follow it. School values, the five C's.
Be inclusive of all, even when we play ball. Keep our schoolyard clean, it'll make the earth more green.
We work in collaborative teaching teams within our learning communities and collaborate through joint accountability and responsibility, shared planning, common teaching practices, as well as shared language and beliefs. We believe that curiosity and learning go hand in hand, and we assist our students to direct their own learning by using thinking skills and their curiosity as learning strategies. We love students to ask questions, show enthusiasm, and really engage in their learning. The school also offers specialist programs in Auslan, STEM, visual arts, performing arts, and physical education. Our staff are also committed to their own professional development, and we work together on deepening our knowledge through research, refining our skills, and using data to drive our teaching. The staff, parents, students, community, and I are committed to making Glenroy Central the best it can be.
There are five of them, school values. Yes, please.
And now some facts and figures from the My School website. The enrolment, 260, and the ICSEA value, well below average, at 977, representative of a diverse urban community. In the upper 25% of parental income, we have 8% of students. 17% of students have parents in the second quartile of incomes. The third quartile, i.e. below 50%, make up 28% of students, and 46% of students have parents earning the lowest 25% of incomes, with 82% speaking a language other than English and 1% Indigenous students. The finances, recurrent grants from the Australian Government of only $99,620, and from the Victorian Government, $3.5 million. Private fees and contributions add another $77,000, and that comes to $18,105 per pupil. The capital, $2.5 million over 3 years. The NAPLAN results are well above average. Something very special is going on at this school. This is a school doing an amazing job on very basic funding. Back to you, Jean.
Getting new ideas, discovering with our peers, making mistakes without any fears. Learning new ideas to get information, and learning new skills to figure out situations. Being interested and engaged in new things, trying really hard to improve our learning curiosity.
There are five of them, school values. Yes, please, the school values. You better follow it.
Well, congratulations to those brilliant children out there. Not only do they compose great rap songs, but their NAPLAN results are the best I've ever seen. And they, so many of them have got two languages. So it is a quite remarkable school with remarkable teachers that are prepared to fight for the children, as we are too here on 3CR.
Congratulations, Glenroy Central Primary School. You are our Great State School of the Week. And I'd just like to remind listeners, if you can get along to Glenroy Community Hub, that's 50 Wheatsheaf Road in Glenroy, next Thursday, the 4th of December, from 6 to 8pm. It's a public meeting and they're calling for as many community members to come along and put pressure on the government to commit to fully funding. So please get along. Glenroy Community Hub, 50 Wheatsheaf Road, Thursday the 4th of December from 6 to 8.
But our time is gone, and from all of us here at 3CR, it's bye for now.
I dreamed I saw Joe Hill last night, alive as you and me. Says I, but Joe, you're 10 years dead, I never died, says he. I never died, says he. In Salt Lake City, Joe says I, him standing by my bed. They framed you on a murder charge, says Joe, but I'm dead. Says Joe, but I'm dead. The copper bosses killed you, Joe. They shot you, Joe, says I. Takes more than guns to kill a man, says Joe, I didn't die. Says Joe, I didn't die. And standing there as big as life, and smiling with his eyes, says Joe, what they can never kill, went on to organize. Went on to organize. From San Diego up to Maine, in every mine and mill, where workers strike and organize, it's there you'll find your hill. It's there you'll find. I saw Joe here last night, alive as you and me. Says I, but Joe, you're 10 years dead. I never died, says he. I never died, says he.
Thanks for listening to a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We rely on the financial support of listeners like yourself to keep going. Will you help 3CR by becoming a regular donor today? Together, we can keep independent voices on air. Go to 3cr.org.au. And thanks for your support.